Hello and welcome to the 34th episode of the Extreme Sports Performance Podcast. My name's Ryan Blake, I'm the founder and director of Extreme Sports Performance. In today's episode, I'm chatting all things running with Kevin Quinn. Kevin is a professional runner and a professional running coach. And I ask him the questions I ask all my guests: who he is, what he does, where's he come from, what has he done along the way, what are the key moments from his career so far, what are his top areas of interest, what are the most valuable things he's learnt, who are his top influences, what are his top resources for information, what are his top sports performance exercises and or drills, and what are his top pieces of advice. We freestyle a lot in between questions as normal. Really enjoyed recording this one with Kevin. Hope you enjoy listening to it. Here we go. Hi, Kevin. Thanks for joining us on the Extreme Sports Performance Podcast today.
Brilliant. Thank you for having me, Ryan. It's a pleasure.
So, I've been really keen to get you on the show for a long time. Could you start by telling everyone who you are and what you do?
Yep, so I'm Kev Quinn. I'm a marathon runner. I have a personal best of 2 hours and 22 minutes and 12 seconds. I am head coach at Team Real Runners, coach for New Balance Running, in sport running, do some work in schools also. Had heart surgery in 2016. After running the London Marathon, running 2:25 at London Marathon, and since heart surgery, I've been running faster, better than ever. Kind of have a new lease on life, I suppose, since having heart surgery. So, just grateful to be able to put one foot in front of the other and do a sport that I love.
Fantastic. Unfortunately, there's a lot of banging and clattering going on in the background. I don't really know where that's coming from. Just to kind of dial a little bit deeper into the heart surgery, was that something that had to happen for your personal health and wellness, or was that a decision that was an optional for you to make?
Yeah, so I did London Marathon in 2015, it was around 2:25, super happy with that, but after the race just started getting some pains in my chest, like almost immediately after the race, and it would only happen in the evening. And there was a few occasions I would look into the mirror and I could see that my face had dropped a little bit.
Yeah.
I remember thinking, like, you know, there's no way I could have had a stroke. I've just run 2:25, you know, at London. So I went to Cardiac Risk and the Young, brilliant charity, who do health screenings. And they scanned my heart and they found that I had a heart defect. I had four holes in my heart. Biggest hole was like 1.8 centimetres, so quite big in the upper chambers of my heart, and they said that I needed to have it repaired, because what they were concerned about was a clot bypassing that hole, find its way to my brain and having, you know, like a stroke or also my right side of my heart was massively dilated where it's just working too hard, but they patched me up and, you know, I'm fitter and healthier than ever.
Brilliant. Well, that's great to hear, and I mean, it just goes to show with someone at your level of fitness, you know, that any health scares like that are possible.
Even
in like the elite athletes. So it's good that, you know, it was picked up early.
Yeah.
You do hear these horror stories where everyone assumes everyone's okay.
Yeah.
And then, you know, there is a worst time outcome for some people. So, well, I'm really glad that that's sorted and you're fitting well.
Thank you, Ryan.
So there's six main things I wanted to talk to you about today.
Yeah.
A little bit different from our usual shows, but what I really wanted to make today specific for running, for runners of all levels, all ages. So the first thing I wanted to talk to you about was preparation for running.
Yeah.
And with the people that you work with, how often do you see people not preparing too much, not doing a little bit of both?
Yeah.
And how important is that generally, but also for you at your level?
Yeah, I think obviously preparing for a goal, a race, you know, a championship, preparation is clearly key. You know, you want to be able to perform the best that you possibly can perform on that day. And you do, you know, I've got it wrong on numerous occasions, and I'm sure other people do. For me, if I'm standing on that start line, I want to be standing on there knowing that I've done the homework and, you know, that race can throw the kitchen sink at me and I'm going to grab it and throw it back because I'm prepared. But I see so many people, as you mentioned there, overanalyzing things.
Yeah.
Putting all their eggs in that one basket. People redlining it too much in training sessions, not appreciating rest and recovery, feeling they have to prove fitness to themselves all the time, being a slave to their watch, you know, like, oh, I'm not running quick enough, I need to run quicker. So yeah, I think obviously having a plan, a clear structure of where those weeks are going to go and take you to that main event is crucial.
Yeah.
If you want to get the best out of yourself.
Sure. So if you could think of, say, we like doing top threes on yeah. this show, the top three kind of pieces of advice you'd maybe give someone in order to prepare properly for their next running related event.
Yeah, I'd say before you even start to prepare, just be prepared that it's not going to go 100% how you plan. There is going to be obstacles in the way, you're going to have some ups and downs, and that's just part of that journey. So accept it's not going to go plain sailing. And if that happens, don't get stressed about it. You know, it's out of your hands. It's just part of that process. Second piece of advice is to plan. Make sure you are, you know, you can do that homework, or you can do as much homework as you can for that main event. And I think the third piece of advice is just to not redline it all the time. You know, just don't go at it 100 miles an hour all the time, because all you end up doing is putting yourself into a hole, and you just dig a little bit deeper and deeper, and before you know it, you won't be able to get out of that hole. So, except it's not going to go as smooth as you want it to. It may do, and if it does, like, fair play, but there will be some ups and downs. Make sure you can do the homework as best you can, and during that process, don't redline it all the time.
Yeah, great advice. So, other things that I told you someone was going to come in. He's wondering, what are they doing in there? You probably heard me say as he was making too much noise. So we spoke about preparation.
Yeah.
So directly related to what you need to do to prepare as well as possible, let's talk about what we need to do to recover as well as possible. Now, with all of these, the sports and athletes and teams I work with, from a strength and conditioning point of view, recovery is the thing that is done the worst out of everything,
yeah.
if it's done at all.
Yeah.
So, with everything you've experienced, with all the different levels of runners you've worked with, what do you see is done really well with recovery?
Yeah.
And what do you feel is done really badly with recovery?
Okay, yeah. I guess badly, we'll start off with badly, is just to, you know, if you finish a hard race or a hard training session, is not to refuel. You know, to not rehydrate, to rush hard into another training session. Those are kind of the key things that I see people doing all the time, and I think, you know, you're gonna come unstuck here. So bad things are is just actually not looking after your body. Is actually just appreciate, you know, you put your body through quite a lot of stress, allow it time to recover and repair. So I don't see enough people doing that. I think in terms of doing things well, I try and encourage my athletes. There's like four key things. Get out of their wet, damp clothes ASAP. I see so many people finishing a hard training session, wet, damp clothes on, and they're there standing around for 30, 40 minutes just chatting. You know, you don't want those wet clothes on your back, on your chest. That's going to possibly get you ill or run down. So get out of your clothes ASAP. Hydrate as soon as possible, refuel within 30 minutes of finishing that training session. Allow your body time to recover before you go hard into the next session. And just some light stretching. People don't warm down properly also. I've done my session, I'm not going to bother warming down because I've done it. So I probably waffled on a bit there, Ryan, sorry.
No, it's absolutely fine. I mean, that makes complete sense, and everything you've said there, I feel the things that I often tell athletes who from other sports, not just athletics, they should be doing, but they don't.
Yeah.
I think a lot of it's experience and or lack of experience. But for me personally, if I've been for a run, I know I have to do those things, otherwise I'm not gonna be able to walk properly the next day. So do you feel that there's an element of more importance maybe for older athletes to make sure they have to do those things, or there's less room for them to forget?
Yeah, I think, you know, I you forget how quickly you can bounce back.
Yeah.
You know, from a hard training session when you're young. You know, when I was a kid, I could do 3 hard sessions a week on the track. You know, I could run hard in between and get away with it. You know, now I'm an old man with kids now. You know, I have to really take good care of my body. I can only do 2 hard training sessions a week. Spoke about redlining it. If I do 3 hard sessions a week, I know that 6 weeks' time, I'm going to be ill or I'm going to be injured.
Yeah.
So the rest and the repair and the recovery, and when I talk about recovery, it could be an active recovery, just a slow plod to flush out any lactic from the day before. But it is important to make sure that I'm not doing sessions back to back that are too hard.
Yeah.
So I think as you get older, those key things are crucial if you want to continue to participate in, you know, in the sport that I love. And yeah, I'm sure that crosses over into rugby or whatever, you know, other sports as well.
I do think the simple things, and I say this a lot, and the listeners will probably laugh because they hear me say this all the time, but the simple things done well, with good quality, consistently, over, you know, good periods of time, are what give you good results. And I think that's easy, especially true with old athletes, older athletes as well. Once you start getting grey hairs, there's less room for error, isn't it? Okay, great. So we spoke about preparation and we spoke about recovery. So I want to come on to this more strength and conditioning specifics a bit later.
Yeah.
And talk to you maybe about suggestions, session suggestions or frameworks that people could maybe look to explore depending on what level they're at. I just wanted to talk to you now about travel and the stress that travel has on you personally, but the things that mistakes that you see people making as well. So maybe when they're travelling to like national events and or international events, what's your experience of that and what do you feel that could be done better?
Yeah, I think for me, if I'm traveling, racing abroad, you know, it's kind of making sure that you've planned everything well beforehand. You want to make sure, you know, you stay in your hotel. It's fairly close to the start of to the race. And so, you know, actually jumping onto, you know, Google and actually plotting out, you know, how far it is from one place to the other. So we talk about planning. So just making sure that you consider all those different possibilities. Is there a train station nearby? What happens if the station is not running on that day? Can I still get to the start line? One thing I've always found is air conditioning in hotels, dreadful. And if I don't sort out that air conditioning, I'm going to have a bad night's sleep or I'm going to feel rough the next day. So just, yeah, maybe consider the room temperature. That's going to maybe dehydrate you. Make sure you're stocked up with your own water. Don't just assume there's going to be a shop nearby where you're going to be able to get water and some bits and bobs to eat to keep your fuel intake high. Have a checklist before you travel. Tick off those things and make sure you've got them all covered, I think. So, yeah, make sure you've got water nearby, you've got plenty of food on the go.
Yeah.
You got your kit already? Yeah, just, I guess, things that you think that you take for granted, you know, you don't take them for granted if you're travelling abroad for a race, especially a race that you may have been training for 16 weeks for.
Yeah.
Make sure you've got your own pins. Yeah. You know, don't just assume you're going to be able to get pins at the expo.
Yeah.
Yeah. Vaseline, you know, like, you know, things like just all that, you know, if you've got like deep heat, you need to rub on to your body, those kind of things. It's, yeah.
So don't assume.
Don't assume.
Just be as prepared as possible.
Yeah.
And I feel, I guess, that the more you experience those type of events, the more it becomes habit, doesn't it? Bringing those things with you. Have you ever suffered much from jet lag at all?
Yeah, a little bit from jet lag. Yeah, a little bit. Yeah. And I guess that's just, you know, the days leading into it, just, you know, before you actually fly, you want to try and capitalise on as much sleep as possible.
Yeah, sure.
And again, if you're going to have some jet lag, if it's going to be a few hours you're going to spend on that flight and time difference, you don't want to rock up 24 hours beforehand and then expect to race well the next day if you're tired, if you're shattered. So maybe consider arriving at that event a few days beforehand, you know, it's 3 or 4 days even, just so you can acclimatise to that. Same with altitude as well.
Okay, no, that's really good advice. And I suppose just semi-related to travelling and recovery, have you had much experience with compression garments at all? Do you use those personally?
Yeah, I've never used them, but you'll talk to many athletes who swear by them. I've never used any compression products. You know, I know New Balance have, who are fantastic to me. I know they've got plenty of different compression socks, compression sleeves, and when you when I've travelled to races, you see people sitting on the plane wearing their, you know, little shorts and a pair of compression socks. You know, they look a bit funny in them, but it's does the trick.
I guess it's personal preference, isn't it? But there's a lot of research to suggest there's benefits.
Yeah.
And I've had lots of surgeries personally, my knees and from rugby, and I have to wear socks now when I'm on the plane. Just otherwise I'm in bits for days afterwards.
Yeah.
Just find that extra bit of compression and pressure. Just helps the blood flow a lot more when I'm sat down a lot.
Yeah.
It does make a big difference.
I guess if it works, you're daft, kind of, you know, changing things.
Exactly. Right? And it's like anything in life, I suppose, isn't it? If it feels good, it probably is good, and vice versa. Mm. And you know, if you feel it works for you, then, you know, keep doing it.
Definitely. And psychologically as well, I think. That's the other thing.
So that's a really good segue. So with regards to, you know, physical preparation for these events, how important is the mental preparation for these events? And what do you feel works well for you going into maybe a high-pressure situation or events that may be a little bit more anxious about?
Yeah, as I think the older I've got, the better I've got. Without, I used to be a nervous wreck beforehand as a kid, panicking before a race, trying to find out who your competitors are and find out what their best times are. But the older I've got, the better I've got. I try to visualise the race beforehand, try and think about all the things that can go well. Equally, I try and think about all the things that can go wrong. If I go off too hard, get too carried away, how badly it might go.
Right.
So trying to focus and visualise on the goods and the bads. I think maybe for your listeners that are runners, especially things like a half marathon or a marathon, you're on your feet for a long time and there is going to be points where it's going to go bad and your ego is going to be broken and that little devil on your shoulder is going to tell you you can't do it. And I'd say when that happens, you got to try and be as positive as you can. You need to kind of flip it, replace those negative thoughts with positive thoughts that, you know, like, you can't do it. And I am going to do it. You know, I am going to do it. I will do it. Watch me do it. So just try and be as positive as you can, I'd say, in terms of... And the mind is a powerful thing, right? You start to believe in your own ability. Yeah. It's amazing how far you can push yourself.
Sure thing. Awesome. Okay. Well, I know from personal experience. I mean, the furthest I've ever gone is a half marathon.
Yeah.
But that was a couple of years ago, and it was one of the best things I did because I found it a really good personal achievement because I didn't think I could do it.
Yeah.
Purely just because my body's been through so much, but there were definite moments. It was a Windsor one, so it was quite
tough course.
Quite steep. That there were moments where my body was telling me, you're not going to get to the end of this.
Yeah.
But I think I just looked at it at, you know, a kilometre at a time, really.
Yeah.
Not I've got to finish this.
And yeah.
Just breaking things down into smaller steps
made
it a lot easier.
Oh, yeah. That's great advice. I mean, you know, for somebody from couch to 5K, same thing, you know.
Yeah.
It might be a case that you get yourself up to 1 kilometre, 2K, 3K, you know, before you know it, you're covering 5 kilometres, regardless if it's a brisk walk or a run, but break it down into small segments.
So let's talk about that next then. So if someone's listening and they really want to start running and maybe do their first event and they've not really done much before, what would be your as a coach and as an elite runner, what would be your advice to them?
Small steps.
Okay.
You know, don't think you've gone from coach to 5K and then overnight you're going to be ready for a marathon.
Mm.
You know, like a marathon It's 26.2 miles. It's a long way. So, but there's no reason why you can't eventually get there. So small steps, small goals along that journey, and it may be a case of covering 5K and then running 5K without stopping. You know, so just have small goals. Even if it doesn't go particularly well, take the small victories that you can. That small victory may be a case that you just you got out there and you gave it a go. So just plan, have some race. I'd say races are a great motivational tool and focus. So 5K, 10K, half marathon, marathon.
Yeah.
But don't expect to just throw yourself into something crazy.
Yeah.
Body takes time to get used to it and acclimatise the training effects that are going to get you through.
So it would be a slow and steady build up to distance.
Yeah.
And all volume.
Yeah.
And it just, I suppose, consistently consistent at that. So, you know, being able to run the lower distances consistently well.
Yeah.
Before building up to further distances.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Okay.
I'd say that, you know, we talk about consistency, but it has to be the correct consistency as well.
Sure.
But I think that is really good advice that you said, actually. Just because you run 5 kilometres, it doesn't necessarily mean you need to jump straight to 10K. Like, get comfortable running 5K. And you may see that 5K time just naturally get quicker because your body's becoming a lot more acclimatized to that distance, and it will let you know when it's ready to progress and move forward.
Okay. So let's talk about then people maybe who are already at a half marathon distance,
yeah,
and they're licking their lips for a marathon.
Yeah.
That's their next goal. What would you say they need to kind of focus on from a training aspect specifically?
All depends on the individual, you know. You might and ages. If you've got someone who is slightly older, you know, they have a history of injuries, Achilles problems, calf problems, you probably back off the speed work a little bit. You know, the stresses of getting on their midfoot, forefoot, and pushing on. So I think it all depends on that individual.
Okay.
Bread and butter, you need to increase your long runs. It's the time of the feet. It's important psychologically as well. You want to be physically and mentally ready. You know, I've covered 18, 20 miles in training, plus all the other miles in the week. I should be able to finish 26.2 miles here. If you are maybe somebody's focused on more of a time, performance time, speed work is obviously important as well. Just working on your running economy, so trying to get your physiological parameters down, heart rate down, oxygen consumption down for a specific workload, and that will happen through speed work, tempo runs, threshold runs, yeah, with the typical running jargon. But yeah, key sessions that are going to get your legs ticking over faster, tapping into your fast twitch fibers. But you need that consistency. And you mentioned about S&C earlier. That kind of stuff is also important, fitting in your S&C, your stretching, to allow you to be able to do that consistent training to hit the goal that you want to hit.
So, we've touched upon it there. So, say you've got then a seasoned veteran, someone who's run a handful of marathons at a decent time.
Yeah.
And they're in good shape, but they want more. They want to run a PB.
Yeah.
They're not quite reached yet. You mentioned certain specifics they have to do, which will help with that. Could you go into a little bit more detail, maybe give some examples about speed work, those tempo runs, just, you know, basic sessions, examples of sessions that people could, listening to this, might be able to try and do themselves?
Yeah, for sure. I think a lot of people that do run, what they tend to do, Ryan, is they put one foot in front of the other. They just get out and they run, which is fantastic. I mean, that's brilliant. But a lot of people get into this habit of just the same pace.
Yeah.
You know, not so much plodding, but just one foot in front of the other moving forward. I think mixing that up with some intervals, 10 by 1 minute on, 1 minute off. And that 1 minute off could be a walk, but that 1 minute on, strong running. You know, change your mechanics, run fast, you know, feel good. There's nothing better than running fast. So You know, it could be 1 minute strong running, quicken your 5K pace, aiming for your mile, maximum mile pace, and then that 1 minute recovery, just slow jog, brisk walk, just allow that heart rate to drop, and then go again. And that's 10 minutes of hard running, but you'll be amazed at what that can do for your fast twitch fibers. Mm. Just having a look at your watch and, wow, am I really running that fast? I didn't think I could. 1 minute then will become 2 minutes, 2 minutes become 4 minutes, 4 minutes might become 10 minutes. So, but you never know if you don't kind of excel and push yourself.
So how would those intervals and that speed work, how would that help someone then when they run a marathon?
So I guess for that, somebody may run that 1 minute effort at 6 minute miling, yeah, and they are looking to break 4 hours of the marathon, so just over 9 minute miling. So the further you can take someone away from that average pace, the easier it's going to feel. You still have to do the bread and butter, the long runs, but we want to take you so far away from that average marathon pace that when you're forced to run at that pace, it feels that much easier.
Got it. Okay.
I think that makes sense.
Yeah, complete sense. I found my sweet spot when I did take my mind back to Windsor. I found my sweet spot pace, which it wasn't easy, it wasn't too hard, but it was a pace that I felt comfortable at.
Yeah.
And I suppose steady at. I knew if there was a hill there, or I was going up or down a hill, at different phases of that race, the pace would change.
Yeah.
But I wouldn't panic, because I knew that if once I got back to that, I suppose, race pace for me, everything settled down. But I had that ability where I was comfortable running a bit quicker,
yeah,
if I had to. One thing which I don't think we've spoke about is those races are pretty chaotic sometimes.
Yeah.
And they're busy.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of people in your way, and it can be quite frustrating.
Yeah.
Especially if you're, not at the front of the pack. So I think being prepared to be forced to slow down or speed up was the biggest shock for me when I first did it. I mean, what was your experience of that?
Yeah, I actually, London Marathon, when 2015, when I found out about my heart, I remember somebody saying to me, I wanted to run 2:25.
Yeah.
And I remember some guy saying to me, just remember on that start line, today's the day, 300-400 people don't run sub 2:25. And that really stuck with me. He said, just remember that for the first couple of miles. And the gun went off, and there was about 300-400 people ahead of me. And I had to kind of remind myself, this is my race. I've trained 16 weeks really hard for this. I'm not prepared to screw this up in the first mile or two, chasing these people, changing my game plan because they're pushing on. And slowly but surely, they all came back. That race, in the championship start, I finished 27th, so, pulled all these people back. But it's hard to force yourself back, but just remind yourself, you might feel good at mile one and two, you're not going to feel like that later on in the race. It will start to bite.
Sure.
And if you push that early pace too hard, it's going to start to bite a lot sooner than you think.
Yeah, sure.
I think force yourself, plan to force yourself to hold back and focus on your race and don't let anyone else change.
So that's really interesting to hear, especially from someone running at a much quicker pace than I was. I often hear people talk about, or I suppose it's a common question to ask, about hitting the wall in a marathon. And I mean, I've personally heard it's, towards maybe within the last 5, 6, 7 miles, it feels like you've run into a wall and your energy's gone. I mean, is that an accurate way of describing it, or is there a bit more to it than that? Why does that happen?
No, I mean, it really does feel like you are running into a wall. It feels like someone has whacked on that light switch and you are just drained, your glycogen's gone and you've just got no energy, no fuel.
Yeah.
And essentially that will happen if you go off too quick. Body only has 90 minutes of glycogen.
Yeah.
And if you are utilising all that glycogen far too early,
yeah,
some people might even struggle to get to 8-9 miles. So they're hitting the wall so early in that race. So I think it's...
Is there an average distance that, from your experience, that kicks in Like, when's the kind of earliest and latest dislike markers of a marathon that happens that you've experienced?
Yeah, so the irony is I'm talking about don't fall into anyone else's race. So 2015, I didn't do that. In 2018, after having my heart repaired and running so much quicker than I ever had,
yeah.
I went back to London, 2019 I think it was, and I really wanted to break 220. And I was a bit unsure whether I was in that shape, but I went off with the leading group and I think we went through the first 5K at 216 pace, and I knew that it was going to end badly, and I got to halfway and I was struggling. Went through halfway, just over 69 minutes, and yeah, I was screwed.
Really?
Yeah, I was in a bad way, and I planned to drop out the race, but I saw my family and friends, and you see so many people running for such fantastic charities, and you run in memory of people.
Yeah.
But I persevered and I finished, and it was great finishing, but it was an awful experience. You know, so I'd hit that wall before halfway.
Right, okay.
But then I went to Valencia that same year in December, and I kind of made sure that I stuck to my game plan. And actually, I ran 2:22. I didn't hit the wall. My last 2 or 3 miles was kind of running 5 minute mile and much quicker than the average pace. So I think you judge your race properly, you get your fueling right, you know, you do the homework and you stick to that game plan, you could actually run a whole race without hitting that wall.
Okay.
But it is hard not to get carried away. Sometimes it just happens.
I get it. I mean, especially if you've got a goal in mind, or there's, I suppose, external pressures on you, you get caught up in it, don't you?
Yeah.
So we spoke about the glycogen depleting. So let's talk about nutrition. So let's talk about training first. So if you're going to be doing, you know, how do you split your training sessions up in a week? Do you do light, medium, or hard sessions, or do you kind of categorise them by distance or time? How do you do it?
Yes, not by time on myself. It will be kind of roughly, I will run maybe 80 to 90 miles a week training, and that would be double runs most days.
Yeah.
Majority of my running would be pretty easy. People have different philosophy, 80-20, like 80 easy, 20% hard. I guess you have to find what works for you.
Sure.
I would do one interval session a week and one tempo threshold run a week. Threshold would be kind of between half marathon and marathon pace, slightly longer.
Yeah.
Interval sessions will be fairly short, tapping into my fast twitch fibers, running quick.
A lot of it
is just easy running.
Okay.
Yeah, just easy running, really.
That's really interesting. So how would you fuel for those then, Kev? What would be your kind of typical breakfast, lunch or dinner in around those easier and harder training days?
Yeah. I'll be honest with you, like, there's no point lying. My diet could be a hell of a lot better, and I'm sure you'll ask any athlete, any person really, you know, anyone that says my diet is amazing, probably lying, probably telling fibs. But my morning runs, like this morning I ran just at 6 o'clock this morning, ran 9 miles, I ran that completely fasted. I had a cup of tea actually, and then went out for a run. I will come back and I will try and eat within that 30 minute window, like cereal, banana, try and avoid coffee in the morning, like an orange juice. Do like my coffee, so I will have a couple of coffees a day, but during breakfast, try and park that caffeine to one side. Lunch, just bowl of pasta, you know, quite fortunate at school, what kind of work at, it's got good lunches, so the lunches are always good.
Yeah.
Just the typical big dinner, I try and get plenty of carbs in me, some protein in there as well. Throughout the day, I will try and stay as hydrated as I possibly can.
Yeah.
Maybe 2-3 liters of water a day. But most morning runs, fasted. If I'm doing a track session or my interval session or tempo, I'll try and have, you know, a decent breakfast beforehand, maybe an hour and a half before.
Yeah.
Just so I can go in that and I know that I'm not going to bonk, I'm not going to have any glycogen depletion. If I'm doing a long run, I'll run with gels. Anyone that's doing a marathon or a half marathon or attempting to use gels, say get into the habit of practicing how those gels sit on the stomach before you go into that event, because sometimes they, yeah, can leave you short, you know, on a run if you need to find the loo or something like that.
I've been there. I think the it's a typical first race mistake of like not thinking you need to use the loo.
Yeah.
So just before.
God.
And then there's just queues and queues of people who all have the same problem. But
yeah.
I found that I played around with using those carbohydrate gels, and some were more hydrating than others, but it took my body by surprise the first time. But then I got, the more I used them, the kind of more used I got to them, but I found that that got me through personally. I think that's brilliant advice. But it's like anything really, as with any other sports, like don't try different type of food or something you've never eaten before.
Yeah.
Like the day before or on off an event.
Yeah.
Because you just never know how your digestive system's going to respond.
Yeah.
And
it's amazing how many people do, right?
Like, amazing.
I mean, I'm sure with the number of athletes you've worked with.
It's especially when you're travelling, like to different countries, and the cuisine's different.
Yeah.
It's great to explore and try different things, but do it on a recovery day or a day where you don't have to do, you don't train or don't have to compete. So if things do go wrong, you can get away with it.
Yeah.
I think, just stick to things you know your body can tolerate and use well and not upset you.
Yeah.
So that's great advice. I know people don't like talking about it, and there's probably a few listeners going, oh, that's gross, but we've all been there.
Yeah.
So, you know, we might as well be upfront about it.
Yeah.
So we spoke about nutrition and your different types of, I suppose, conditioning side of your running.
Yeah.
So how important is strength work to you and other forms of, I suppose, power training, maybe plyometrics? Is that something that you have to do or something you feel is important?
Yeah, plyometrics, did loads as a kid when I was on the tracks, more explosive stuff.
Yeah.
To be honest, I don't do a great deal of it now. Mm-hmm. I know that I should, you know. I think a lot of people get to a certain age and they think, right, okay, I'm past that. I'm not going to get any benefits from doing plyometrics. We kind of park it up, which is kind of nonsense, really, if we still can be explosive and, you know, have a bigger stride.
Yeah.
It's going to be able to run faster. That is going to help towards that. In terms of the strength and conditioning, I tend to just do a lot of core, my own body weight. I think it's really important for you, like biomechanics. I think if you want to hold your form, because there's going to be a point where you're going to get tired, you're going to start to drop and sink. If you're strong in your core, you're going to be able to maintain good posture, hold that form better.
Yeah.
I think people like yourself that have tons of knowledge that can point a lot of right athletes in the right direction, kind of really need to draw upon information that you guys provide us. There's a lot of bad information out there as well. Yeah, you see a lot of people trying to hold the plank and they're holding it awful, and you're like, God, your poor lumbar spine is gonna be battered. So yeah, I tend to do a lot of core and a lot of activation stuff. Never used to believe this whole, oh, my glutes weren't firing, you know, oh, you need your glutes to be firing. Just like, what a load of nonsense. But then the whole kinetic chain, you know, my quads would be overworked and get problems with my hips, and it would be a case of just doing a couple of bridges, activating them, or some chair squats, and it'd be like, okay, right, everything feels like it's firing all right now.
So
I'd say 2-3 times a week, just fit it in.
Find time.
10-15 minutes.
It doesn't need to be overly complicated.
Yeah.
Just body weight related compound movements, core work, activation work, and plyometrics. If you have time, I mean, they're more like icing on the cake really for me than, you know, the compound movements and the core work is probably the more foundational stuff.
Yeah,
I would start with, and the plyos. You know, you ultimately, if you think, let's think about why you're doing them, because you're just trying to make your stride more efficient, I suppose, aren't you?
Yeah.
Quicker contact time on the ground and leaking less energy, better ankle stiffness, all those things which are going to help improve your pace and not almost put the brakes on.
Yeah, we talk about these marginal gains.
Yeah.
And a lot of people that, you know, they haven't really got a clue what these marginal gains are.
Yeah.
And stuff, as you just said there, plyometrics, S&C, activation stuff, that is, they could be, that could be the game changer just there for an athlete.
Okay.
You know, especially when we talk about veteran runners as well. You know, there's those guys, been, you know, may have been running for a long, long time, stuck in their ways, can't see why they can't progress. And then you introduce something like that that they've never touched before, and you know, that could be the answer just there.
I think it's about doing some things, not everything.
Yeah.
Seeing if it works for you, is it valuable? And if it's not, fine. You know, try something else, but at least you've tried it. I mean, I know so many athletes going, oh, I wish I'd done this, or if only I'd done that, because they, for whatever reason, they just felt they didn't want to, or they're embarrassed or scared to. But there's so many different things which could help you.
Yeah.
Give them a go. You know, it's not, but at the right time. Yeah, not the day of an event or the day before. Great, Kev. Awesome. So the last couple of things I want to talk to you then about were, well, very much related to what we were just talking about. So injuries.
Yeah.
So what in your opinion are the most common injuries in runners?
Stress fractures or stress response.
Okay.
Yeah. Or those two things. I guess overuse, more performance based this is.
Yeah.
You know, overuse, too much mileage, redlining it too much, not allowing the body time to recover.
Yeah.
Stress fractures or stress response, and then they continue to train, and then that leads to a stress fracture. Tendinitis, tendinopathy, usually down to poor mechanics or things not being activated, footwear maybe.
Right.
They're probably the
fine.
Yeah, the main injuries.
What would you say can steer you away from those things?
Decent pair of running trainers,
right.
Definitely. Obviously, massive fan of New Balance. So, I have it late, like, ever since I've been wearing them, I've been injury free.
Awesome.
Definitely a pair of
decent running shoes.
But don't just go into your Sports Direct and grab a pair, you know, otherwise you might as well just go in there, shut your eyes. Trainers have to be biomechanically correct for you.
Okay.
Have a look at whether you need supportive shoes.
Yeah.
You know, whether you're a neutral runner, you pronate. Some great running specialist stores out there.
Sure.
So I'd say in terms of injury prevention, decent pair of running trainers, and also just, you know, some S&C, looking after that kinetic chain.
Yeah. So looking after your body, getting I suppose ready for the force that it's probably going to be exposed to on a more regular basis. The key word for me there is robustness. If, you know, if you're robust and you can tolerate force as well as produce it, then, you know, you're less likely to injure yourself.
Yeah.
But by doing all those things we discussed, you know, by, you know, planning your training, preparing properly, wearing the right equipment, doing some strength work, you're maximising your opportunity to run more.
Yeah.
Whereas if you don't do those things, you're minimising it, because you might just reach a limit where you can't go above, or you might be injured and you can't run at all. So I think that's the key message I really tell everybody in any sport is, you know, maximising your opportunity has got to be your highest purpose.
Yeah.
And everything can filter under that. Awesome. So just to kind of wrap up then, Kev, a couple of last things I wanted to speak to you about. When you are training, what kind of variables on your watch are most useful to you, and what can people start to use to track or monitor their progress, or if they're working at the right level?
Yeah, I mean, there's so many fantastic training apps there now.
Yeah.
That you can monitor progression. For me, it tends to be heart rate, mostly because of my heart repair surgery. Pace, I'd like to know what pace I'm running at. Mm-hmm. And also distance, I'm keen to know how far I've gone. So they're the kind of variables that I look at. Things like cadence, don't really look at, to be honest. They give you a VO2 max prediction, but unless you're having a proper physiological assessment, I always take that with a pinch of salt. But yeah, they're the kind of things that I like. I think by having a watch, you know, in some of these training apps, you kind of almost feel you have a bit of accountability, so there's a bit of motivation to get out there and do it.
That's a good point. Yeah.
And it's nice to have that accountability, whether it's, you know, you have a coach, or, you know, whether you pay for an app. But by having that accountability, it gives you that motivation to keep moving forward.
Awesome. Brilliant stuff. Well, I think we've pretty much covered everything there that I wanted to talk to you about today. So thanks very much for your time. I found that really interesting. And if people are listening to this and they maybe wanted to ask you some follow-up questions or explore the world of real runners in a bit more detail, what's the best way they can do that?
They can. Instagram is probably the best way to contact us. Saying that, I don't even know my Instagram name. Hopefully, Ryan, you might be able to put it in your notes.
That's fine. I could put it on the show notes, no problem.
Brilliant. Yeah. Or just the website, just realrunners.co.uk. Yeah. But drop me an Instagram message and I'll always find a time to get back to people.
So, yeah, fantastic.
But yeah, thanks for having me, Ryan. It's been great catching up, and I've learned some good little gems from yourself.
Thanks a lot. So, last bits of advice you would give people listening to this who are into running and want to keep running, also want to improve as well, just maybe some last minute takeaways.
Listen to your body. The best judge of how you're feeling. You know, you listen to your body. If it's not up for it, it's telling you just to back off. So don't be afraid to back off. So listen to your body. It's the best judge of how you're feeling. Whatever event you're doing, make sure you've done the homework. Running is such a honest sport, it will find you out. You know, if you haven't done the homework, it will find you out. So do the work, and just enjoy it. Remind yourself why you're doing this. If you're not enjoying it, park it up and find something else. Running's hard work, but you got to have that, you know, love, that enjoyment, and find some form of motivation while you're doing it, whether that's striving to be the best version of yourself, or running in memory of someone, or, you know, running for a charity, whatever. Just make sure there's a good reason to be putting that one foot in front of the other. Maybe for your well-being, you know, but remind yourself of why you're doing it.
Great stuff. Thanks, Kev.
Pleasure.
Thanks for listening to the 34th episode. We hope you enjoyed the show. It would really help us out if you could please leave a rating and or review on whatever platform you're listening on. Be sure to check out our website, www.extremesportsperformance.com. That has details about our in-person and online services, our in-person and online store, our in-person and online education, our media pages, our contact details, and how to subscribe for free to stay informed about company news and updates. Join our social media community on LinkedIn, Instagram, Facebook, YouTube and Twitter. Links to these can be found at the bottom of all pages on our website and via any search engine. Until next time, take care.